Now we're holding on Yud Gimel Amud Bey's five lines from the bottom. Previously, the Gemara had talked about the issue where we said, in the Mishnah, we said that Rabbi Yehuda had said that besides having a spare Kohen Gadol in case the first one becomes Tamei, we also need to have a spare wife for him in case his wife dies, because as a Kohen Gadol serving on Yom Kippur, he has to be married. And that led into a whole discussion in the Gemara of how exactly we arrange it, that he's married to, that he's married to her before Yom Kippur, but yet that he's married, he's been previously married as well. So therefore, how would we do it such that he, at any given time, he's married to only to one and only one wife? So the maskana was that, the maskana in our Gemara was that he has to give both of his wives conditional gittin, where one of them will take effect. One of them will take effect only if the other one doesn't die, and the other one's get will take effect if he the other one will take effect based on some external factor that he does. For example, going into shul, and that way the idea is if one of them dies, then the other one is still there. And if one of them dies in the middle of the avoda, then what happens is if he realizes that his wife is going to die soon, then he goes into the shul, makes her get a get retroactively, and now it comes out that the whole time he was only married to the other woman. Again, this is all only according to Rabbi Yehuda. According to the Chachamim, none of that is necessary, because according to them, we're not so worried about that one of them is likely to die during that time on Yom Kippur anyhow. It's not common enough for us to worry about, as opposed to that the Kohen Gadol should become Tamei. That's a more common thing, therefore we need an understudy for him. So now the Gemara is going to bring in a side point, which is going to tie back in to this matter of his wife potentially dying and needing a get al tanai for her. So the Gemara says, Tana rabbanan, Kohen Gadol makriv onen ve'ena oicha. A Kohen Gadol is allowed to bring korbanos while he's an onen, but he's not allowed to eat from the korbanos. A Kohen Hedyot is not allowed to do the avoda while he's an onen, but a Kohen Gadol is. It's actually based on a pasuk in this week's parasha, where the pasuk says about the Kohen Gadol min hamikdash lo yetze, that it says he's not allowed to go out of the Beis Hamikdash, and Rashi on the pasuk explains that it means that he continues to the simple meaning of the pasuk is he shouldn't go out so that he doesn't desecrate the avoda, but we also darshan from it that it means that he doesn't go out, and if he doesn't go out and continues doing the avoda, he doesn't desecrate the avoda because he's allowed to, whereas a Kohen Hedyot would. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, but he's not allowed to eat from the kodshim. This is the argument that Moshe and Aaron had in Parshas Shmini when they burnt one of the korbanos, and Aaron argued that even if you told us that you were supposed to be eating the one-time korbanos that are being brought today, that wouldn't necessarily apply to the korbanos, to the korban of Rosh Chodesh, which is being brought today and will be brought again next month, etc. Anyway, Rabbi Yehuda Omer kol hayom. Rabbi Yehuda says all day. Now, my kol hayom. What does Rabbi Yehuda mean by kol hayom? So Rava says what Rabbi Yehuda means is the whole day he should be doing the avoda. So we should bring him. So not only Rabbi Yehuda is saying that if he was in the middle of the avoda, he should continue it. Rabbi Yehuda is even saying that if he was not in the middle of the avoda, let's say he was at home and the Kohen Gadol and one of his close relatives passed away, then he should go to the Beis Mikdash. We will bring him to the Beis Mikdash so that all day long he'll be doing the avoda, and that way he will that'll distract him from his sorrow over his relative. So that's what he means, kol hayom. Omale Abaya, but Abaya says, how could that be? Hashta l'Rabbi Yehuda apukim apkinan le. We have to consider, on the contrary, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we see in another braisa that actually we take him out. Now, who's the him? That's Macholikus Rashi and Tosfos. So let's expose, we'll get to that in a second, but we take him out. So D'tanya, we learn in a braisa. If he, now Rashi explains that this whole thing is talking about a Kohen Hedyot, that if a Kohen Hedyot was standing and bringing a korban on the Mizbeach, now, so we're going to see then, how do we prove from a Kohen Hedyot to a Kohen Gadol? We'll get back to that in a minute. But if he, a Kohen Hediot, was standing on the Mizbeach and bringing a korban, v'shamash, mes loy mes, and then he hears that one of his close relatives passed away, maniach avodasi v'yotze divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says he actually puts down his avoda and leaves. Because, in other words, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that once he becomes an Oinen, then if he continues doing the avoda, he will make it possible. And therefore, he puts down the avoda and leaves. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi Omer Yigma. Rabbi Yossi says he can finish the avoda that he was doing because, fine, he's not allowed to start a new avoda, but he's allowed to finish the one that he was doing. So va'at amet my sin la mitoch beisai. So Abaya says that you're going to tell me that according to Rabbi Yehuda, who's so machmer over here by the Kohen Hediot, and says that he has to break off in the middle of an avoda and leave. And now you're telling me by Kohen Gadol, Rabbi Yehuda is going to say the other way around, that just not only is he allowed to do the avoda, but we're actually going to tell him to leave his house and come here to the Beis Hamikdash to do the avoda. It seems backwards. However, though, Tosfos asks, what kind of a question is that? Okay, the Tosfos doesn't spell out the question, just says that it's a doichik. The Baal Amor on the Rif spells this out. Do you have, even though the Rif himself only wrote on the last perek of Ar Masechta, because the first seven prokim talk about the avoda, and the Rif therefore only includes the halachas that are applicable nowadays, so therefore he only has on the eighth perek. But the Baal Amor has notes here and there on things in earlier prokim that he wanted to comment on. One of them is this. He says the question is, the question is. What's the problem? You could say, especially when it comes to Yom Kippur. We're going to say soon about Yom Kippur, but Bechlal, we find by Yom Kippur, for example, that the Avoda can be done only by the Kohen Gadol. So that's a good reason for Rabbi Yehuda to say that during the rest of the year as well, we should say that the Kohen Gadol is different than the Kohen Hediot. So what's the question? Because he's Machmer on the Kohen Hediot, therefore we expect him to be Machmer on the Kohen Gadol. So rather, what Tosfos explains is, we are talking about the Kohen Gadol. Rabbi Yehuda would say that even though Daraisa he's allowed to serve, but this Braisa that we just said, Maniach Avidasa V'yotze, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, would be Dirabbanan. We don't want him to serve. So we see that Dirabbanan would tell Rabbi Yehuda is telling him to break off. So what are you telling me then, that Fakert in the first Braisa we're telling him bring him from his house and let him do the Avoda? Then Rabbi Yehuda is directly contradicting himself. By the way, as far as this matter of the Kohen Hediot leaving, actually the Rambam paskins that the Kohen Hediot is not allowed to just leave the Beis Hamikdash, like leave in a rush or whatever. It's not covered to the Beis Hamikdash. He does stop doing the Avoda, the Kohen Hediot, because otherwise the Rambam does paskin like Rabbi Yossi that he can finish the Avoda that he was in the middle, but then he's not allowed to start a new Avoda. But he also says that the Kohen Hediot shouldn't just rush out of the Beis Hamikdash in a hurry. He finishes the Avoda that he's doing, and then he doesn't leave in the middle of the Avoda. He leaves at the end of the day. The Ravid disagrees on that and says he can leave. If he's not doing the Avoda, what's he doing there anyway? But anyway. Okay, so back to the Gemara over here. So what does Rabbi Yehuda mean when he says kol hayoy? So Abaya has shot down what Rava said, that it means that Rabbi Yehuda would say that you have him do the avoda all day in order to distract him. Ella Omar Rava, my kol hayoyim. So yeah, Rava changed his mind and said, fine, what does it mean? Kol hayoyim means the other way around. Loimash eino even kol hayoyim. On the contrary, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that he can't do the avoda throughout that whole day. Now, the rule is aninus, this, that a person is an onen after his relative passed away, Midaraisa, that only applies during the day. Well, actually, it applies during the day, Midaraisa, according to everybody. It's a machloikas in Zvachim, whether it applies at night as well. You also have a further machloikas. Is there a difference of it applying by night, Daraisa or Dirabanan? Is there a difference whether the mess was already buried that day? In other words, we could say, Tosfos mentions on at the bottom of Yud Gimel Amud Beis that aninus on the day that the mess died is Daraisa, but aninus on the day that the body was buried, let's say he was buried the next day, that is only Dirabbanan. So you have nowadays also, you have a person is oinen until the body is buried, but only the first day is at daraisa. The rest of the day, if it takes time until he's going to be buried, then the rest of the days is an oinen only dirabbanan. And then you have also the discussion about by night, by night, if the body hasn't been buried yet, is in oinen dirt iso derabbanan. Anyway, so by night we're not going to make a gzera that he shouldn't bring the korbanos. But during the daytime, when he's an oinen, fine, the kohen gadol is allowed to dirt iso, he's allowed to do the avoda, but derabbanan we're not going to allow him to gzera shema yoichal, because a gzera that he might come to eat from the korbanos, and we just said to eat he's not allowed to. So in other words, so the Tanakhama is saying kohen gadol makruv oinen ve'ena oichal, that the Tanakhama distinguishes between bringing the korbanos and eating. Bringing the korbanos he's allowed to, eating them he's not allowed to. Rabbi Yehuda is saying, according to Rava's new explanation, kol hayoim, the whole day he's not allowed to do the avoda, derabbanan, because he may come to eat from the korbanos. So now here is how we tie this back into what we were talking about before about the kohen gadol and his wife. Omelet of Adaba Avala Rava Umi Gozer of Yehuda Shema Yechel. Does Rabbi Yehuda in fact make a gzera that he might eat from the korbanos? So then what we're saying is, so again, during the day when he's an oinen dard isa, then he would be, then we're afraid he's going to be over on the isa dard isa of eating. Therefore, we're not going to allow him to eat. Therefore, we're not going to allow him to do the avoda either. But you're telling me that by night, since anyway, by night, especially after the mess was buried during the day, then it's only midrabanan. And therefore, therefore, Rabbi Huda is going to take the view. So that itself is only derabbanan that he shouldn't eat the korbanos, and therefore we're not going to make a gzera l'gzera. But bechlal, does Rabbi Huda make a gzera of shema yoichal? Batran, we learned in our Mishnah, Rabbi Huda, ima afisha acheres maskinin loy. We said that Rabbi Huda says you prepare for him another wife, shema tomus ishtoi, in case his wife dies. Now his wife is one of the seven relatives that he's an oinen for. V'i maisa ishto. Now, what happens if his wife dies? Ovid avoda. Then he's doing the avoda. V'lo gozer Rabbi Yehuda shema yoichal. Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned and is not making a gzera that he might eat from the korbanos. So we see Rabbi Yehuda doesn't make such a gzera. So why over here? Why the rest of the year would he make such a gzera? Now, what is there to eat on Yom Kippur anyway? I mean, Bechlal, the Gemara is going to answer, obviously, that nobody's eating on Yom Kippur anyway. So that'll remind him not to. But Bechlal, even before we get to that answer, what parts of the korbanos of Yom Kippur are there available to eat anyway? So what there is, you have most of the korbanos of Yom Kippur are oilos and are completely burnt, or the chatos and israfos. They're the special kind of chatos where the blood is brought into the heichol and then into the kodesh hakodashim, the power the sorosh of Yom Kippurim. So none of those are available to eat anyway. But among them, with suffim of Yom Kippur, there is a chatos. And usually what happens is that chatos is, now during Yom Kippur itself, obviously they can't cook it because you can't cook on Yom Kippur. Usually what they do is they cook it or roast it, matzi Yom Kippur, and eat it. So one possibility is we're talking about that. That is, after all, able to be eaten. So he might conceivably eat it on Yom Kippur, and therefore on the face of it, Rabbi Yehuda should say his same gzera. On the other hand, Cheshek Shloimer in the back of the Gemara points out, come on, I mean, that's still going to be raw on Yom Kippur. Are we going to be choshesh that he's going to forget himself and cook the meat and eat it all raw over here? It doesn't make sense. So he says, maybe what we mean is, let's say, for example, if Yom Kippur comes out on Shabbos, then you have the old lech of aponim, one of the avodas that's going to be done that day, is the old lech of aponim is taken off the shulchan, a new lech of aponim is put on, and the old lech of aponim is distributed among the kohenim. On a regular Shabbos, they would be eating it during that day on Shabbos. Now, because it's Yom Kippur, they'd have to wait till Matzah Yom Kippur. So maybe, he says, maybe what the Gemara means is that we should have to at least be goyzer that if Yom Kippur comes out on Shabbos, that he shouldn't be doing the avoda, because then he might forget himself and eat some of the lech. So what, in any case, the question is, why we see that we don't do that? We have him do the avoda on Yom Kippur, even though he's an oinen. Why the rest of the year would Rabbi Yehuda be saying that we don't allow him to because he might eat? So the Gemara says, Omalei. So Rava answers, Rav Adaba Abba, Hochi Hashta. What kind of a comparison is that? In this case, we're talking about Yom Kippur. Nobody is eating on Yom Kippur. So therefore, he's not going to forget himself and eat as well. But over here, since during the rest of the year, if he does the avoda while he's in oinen, everybody else is eating pieces of the korbanos. He may forget himself and eat as well. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda finds it necessary to make this gzera the rest of the year, but not on Yom Kippur. But now the question is, After all, let's say it now. Now let's revisit our premise, though. Rabbi Adabar Ava is asking based on the premise that when the Kohen Gadol's wife, if the Kohen Gadol's wife dies on Yom Kippur, he's going to be an Onan. But would he in fact be an Onan? We just said in the Gemara before that we make an arrangement, according to the Behuda, involving conditional Gittin, where in particular one of the conditions is that if one of his wives dies, then he's going to previously go into shul in order to make the tnai for that get take effect, and that way she'll have been retroactively divorced from the beginning of Yom Kippur before he ever started doing the avodah. That way, from the beginning of Yom Kippur, he had one and only one wife. So now, at this point, when his wife dies during Yom Kippur, at this point, she's his ex-wife, so he's not an Onan anyway. So what's the problem? So the answer is, the Gemara says, Nihi dan ninus lechayil alei. Fine, technical aninus min atoda is not chal on him because they're not married anymore. It's rudi miloi mitrid, but isn't he still distracted? The fact is he was married to this woman for who knows how many years, and now she passed away, and therefore he's going to be sad. And when it comes to Rashi explains, when you eat kodshim, you have to be besimcha. You have to eat it in a way of gdula. So therefore, if he's upset over the fact, yes, la halacha, she's not his wife anymore, but practically speaking, he's still going to have feelings for her. So therefore, on the face of it, we should have to be concerned that if he ate the korbanos, he'd be over on the technical iser of eating korbanos while he's an onan, but rather that he'd be over on the iser of not eating korbanos when he's not besimcha. So on the face of it, that's why Rabbi Adabar Ava was asking that Rabbi Huda, who's concerned about that he might eat from the korbanos when he's an onan, he should make a gzeira in this case also. And Rabbi tells him here it's different because Yom Kippur, nobody else is eating anyway, and therefore there's no chashash that he's going to. Tosfos Yeshanim doesn't like Rashi's explanation of itrudi miloi mitrid, because the fact is we never find anywhere else that if a kohen is sad because of some other external factor that he should not be able to eat the korbanos. So rather, Tosfos Yeshanim explains the other way around. The question was that even if we were to think to make a gzeira on Yom Kippur, because even if we were going to say that the fact that nobody else is eating, he still might forget and eat from the korbanos anyway. But the fact of the matter is, the fact of the matter is, again, he's not an onan, so why shouldn't we make a gzeira? Why should we even think to make a gzeira? After all, he's not an onan. And the answer is because if we made a gzeira, then he might be distracted because not because he's sad like Rashi says, and therefore he's not allowed to eat from the korbanos, but because he's distracted, because he's troubled by the death of his wife, therefore he might forget and eat from the korbanos. So if it was necessary to make a gzeira on Yom Kippur, then in fact we would have made it because of that. But now that we're saying that we don't need to because nobody else is eating on Yom Kippur anyway, and therefore there's no concern that even in his distracted state, he's going to forget and eat from the korbanos, then we're good and we don't have to make such a gzeira, and he can do the avodah on Yom Kippur. Okay. Mishnah says, Kol shivasa yomim, throughout the 7 days. Now we said in the first Mishnah that the Kohen Gadol is sequestered in this room in the Beis Hamikdash in the Lushkas Behedrin for 7 days. So we said that we talked about why he has to be there for 7 days. Is it because we learn from the Miluim? Is it because we learn from Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai? Is it to a practical reason to prevent him from becoming Tomei in case his wife becomes Suffolk Nida or whatever? But what is he doing during those 7 days? So the Mishnah says, Kol shivasa yomim, throughout those 7 days. Now he needs to practice the avodah. The fact of the matter is, even though he's the Kohen Gadol, not necessarily during the year has he been doing the avodah. He has the option to, as we're going to say later in the Mishnah, but he hasn't necessarily been. And on the other hand, in Yom Kippur, he's going to have to do all the avodahs. So he needs to practice. So kol shivasa yomim hu zodek hasadam, throughout the seven days before Yom Kippur, he's the one who sprinkles the blood of the korbanos tamid, so that he's familiar with what to do. Umakdiras haktodes, he's the one who offers the ktodes on the Mizbeach HaZahav, Umeitev HaSaneiris, he's the one who prepares the lamps of the menorah. The Machlokes Rishonim, what Meitev means, does it mean, most of the Rishonim learn that Meitev means cleaning them out, putting in new oil and wicks, trimming them, etc. The Rambam holds that it also means lighting them. According to everybody else, you only light them one time a day in the evening. According to the Rambam, you light them twice a day, in the morning and in the evening. Anyway, so he does that. Because again, on Yom Kippur, he's going to have to be doing all those things himself. And every day during those 7 days, he also offers the head and the front leg of the animal of a korban tamid on the mizbeach. We're going to learn in the next perek, Bez Hashem, that there's an order in which the evorim, in which the limbs of the korban tamid or of any korban ola were brought onto the mizbeach. And the first ones that were brought over there and the first ones that then were taken and thrown into the fire were the head and the right front leg of the animal, and the back front and the head and the head and the right leg of the animal, the right back leg of the animal. So those two, he would, so some of the Mefarshim say it means he would actually throw in all the pieces, because the Mishnah just mentions those two, because those are the first two, and others say that no, it just means he would throw in just those two. Once he does those, then already that's enough to make him, to familiarize him with what he needs to do, so that's good enough, and we don't need to be matriachim to do all the rest of them. Ushar kol hayamim, continues the Mishnah, throughout the rest of the year, im rotza lahakriv, if the Kohen Gadol wants to be makriv, or Rashi adds also if he wants to clean out, repair the menorah, or he wants to do any of the other avodas, makriv, then he can do that. The mishmar that's on duty that we can't prevent him. They can't say it's our turn because he's the Kohen Gadol, so therefore he can do it whenever he wants. So he doesn't need, and they don't need a pious. We're going to learn in the next parak that they had four pyosis throughout the day to determine who does what avoda. The Kohen Gadol can preempt them anytime he wants and do any particular avoda himself. Shekohen Gadol makriv chelik barosh. The general rule is the Kohen Gadol can bring the first portion if he wants to bring the portions onto the mizbeach. He can do whatever he wants. He has first choice. V'noto chelik barosh. And when they divide up the kodshim, then they give him the first and best portion. Again, whichever portion he chooses. So for example, in Masechta Tamid, it talks about the details of if the Kohen Gadol wants to be makriv, the pieces of the korban on the mizbeach, how they arrange it, how they do it in a way that's makovedik to him, where you have the Kohen who was supposed to be throwing it on top of the mizbeach, hands him the piece, and the Kohen Gadol, if he wants, does smicha on it, and then he throws it into the fire, and so forth. And as far as the noto chelik barosh, for example, it says as far as the lachem upon him, that the mishmaris divide up the lachem upon him, and the Kohen Gadol gets half of the lechem aponim that all the mishmaris have, and then the rest is distributed among the other Kohenim. Okay, so the Gemara starts off.
And now, if the Kohen Gadol only has him and his wife, and let's say, and they can't finish lechem aponim, it gets burnt?
When we give it to the Kohen Gadol, he can in turn then give it to whoever he wants. It's not like it's only mutter for him and his family to eat. If the Kohen Gadol himself has a large family and a large entourage, and for that matter, if he himself has a big appetite, like Yochanan ben Naroi that we learned about in Pesachim, then he may well be able to eat all that himself. If not, then yeah, he can give it out to whatever other Kohenim he wants. Now, so we said in the first Mishnah that the Kohen Gadol is in this room for 7 days, and we said that also... We discussed also earlier that during those 7 days they sprinkle him with parah adrama water. Now we're saying that he's doing the avoda during those 7 days. Now there might be a contradiction between those according to Rabbi Akiva, which we're going to discuss now. So the Gemara says, "Man Tana, which Tana is it that says that he would do the avoda during those 7 days, despite the fact that he's been sprinkled with parah adrama water?" And remember, if he was tamei, then of course the sprinkling is effective. But if he wasn't tamei, why is he being sprinkled? So Amar Rav Chista deloy k'Rav Akiva. So Rav Chista says our Mishnah therefore has to be not like Rav Akiva. De'i Rav Akiva ha'amar tohor shenafla alav hazah timatu. Rabbi Akiva holds that if a tahor person, if parah adrama water fell on a person who was tahor, then it makes him tamei. The Chachamim say that The Chacham agree, as we're going to say in the sugya, that if a person touches or carries the parah drama water not for the purpose of sprinkling, then he becomes tameh. Fine. But Rabbi Akiva adds to that, in addition, that if a Tahor person was sprinkled with parah drama water and he was Tahor and he didn't need to be sprinkled, then that parah drama water actually makes him tameh. Not, he's not tameh to the same degree as a tameh mess, of course. He's only tameh tumas erev. He has to go to the mikveh and he and his clothes have to go to the mikveh and they need a head of shemesh. But still, according to Rabbi Akiva, if we sprinkle the Kohen Gadol during these 7 days, whether we sprinkle him every day, whether we sprinkle him only a couple of the days, whatever it is, according to Rabbi Akiva, that's going to make him tamei. Therefore, he's not going to be able to do the avoda that day. So our Mishnah must be not like Rabbi Akiva. So heichi avid avoda. According to Rabbi Akiva, if we sprinkle him and he probably wasn't tamei mess before that, then how could he do the avoda? The Tanya, namely, we learn in a braisa. The pasuk says v'hizah tohar ala tamei. The pasuk says the tohar person should sprinkle on the tamei person. Now, the word al hatame in the pasuk, as the Gemara is going to point out later, the word al hatame is extra. Because, of course, we know he's sprinkling on the tame. The whole context over there in Parshas Parah is talking about when a person is tame mess and he's being sprinkled. So, therefore, al hatame tahor, al hatar tame, divrei Rabbi Akiva. So, Rabbi Akiva says the parah drama water has the ability to make a tame person tahor, but the vice versa, it has the capability of making a tahor person that it was sprinkled on tame, divrei Rabbi Akiva. Whereas the Chachamim say that no, the word ala tome is coming for a different drasha. It comes to teach us that the concept of hazah only applies to things that are makabel tuma. If parah aduma water lands on something which is not makabel tuma, then it's not called hazah, which is maihi. So what does that mean? What's the relevance? What does that mean according to the Chachamim? Kedatan, we learn in a Mishnah in Parah. If the person, it doesn't have to be a Kohen, I don't think, but if a person intended to sprinkle on an animal, now an animal is not makabel tuma, the hizala adam, and instead he sprinkled on a person, if there is still water left on the ezov, yeshana, then he can repeat. He can just go and sprinkle on the person. He does not have to dip the azov again. Because even though he dipped the azov, having in mind that he was going to sprinkle it on an animal, but because he did end up sprinkling on a person, so fine, that sprinkling is not kosher, but it's not matame the person, because he didn't have in mind to sprinkle on him, but nevertheless, still, it's good enough that now he's able to sprinkle on him again with kavana and not have to dip the azev again. So im yesh be'ezev, there's still water in the azev, yeshana, then he can repeat, he can go and sprinkle again using that azev without having to dip it again. Niskaven lahazas ala adam behiz ala behema, but vice versa, if he intended to sprinkle on a person and he instead sprinkled on an animal, im yesh be'ezev, then if there is still water in the ezev, lo yeshana, then he's not allowed to use the leftover water. He has to dip the ezev again. He has to dip the ezev again and then sprinkle on the person.
Why would he be sprinkling on behema for?
Well, he wouldn't. That's the thing. He didn't mean to, but let's say he did. Let's say he did by accident. The point is, Rashi says the fact that he sprinkled on the animal means that now malacha was done with the parah drama water, and malacha passels the parah drama water. So therefore, the water that remains in the ezov is possible to use for sprinkling again. And therefore, he needs to dip the ezov again. Tosfos Yeshanim actually asks on that, that we find that the malacha passels the we find that malacha passels the water. It's true, but only before the ashes were put into the water. The ashes themselves, if you do malacha, are possible. The water itself, if you do malacha, but not once they're mixed together. So therefore, what's going on over here? Why would we say that malacha then passels the malacha passels the water when it's already mixed? So they bring from Rabbeinu Chananel, who actually has the gears of the other way around, that if he intended to sprinkle on the animal, then What happens is now the person picked up paradoma water, not for the purpose, because he picked it up using the azev, not for the purpose of a valid sprinkling. And therefore, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, that makes him tamei, because he picked up paradoma water, not for the purpose of sprinkling. So therefore he can't sprinkle again, because he himself and the water is tamei. So on the other hand, if he intended to sprinkle on a person, then he picked it up for the purpose of sprinkling. So then he's allowed to use that water for sprinkling on that person or on somebody else. Anyway, the point is we see from all of this that there's a difference whether the thing that he sprinkled on is mekabel tumah or not. So therefore, in other words, whether the mitzvah was done with the water or not. So the Chum say, that's what we learned from the word. Ala tamei, that key difference is the thing able to become tamei? But not that we're going to learn, like Rabbi Akiva, that if a tahor person was sprinkled with paradoma water, he becomes tamei. So the Gemara says, my time at Rabbi Akiva. So what's Rabbi Akiva's reason that he would say such a thing? Because he says, Nichta Rahmana Behiza Tor Olav. Because after all, if the Torah just meant that a person, that the Tomei needs to be sprinkled with paradoma water, didn't have to say Allah Tomei, it could have said the Torah should sprinkle on him. And we know who the him is. We know the whole Psukim before that have been talking about a person who's Tomei Mess. My Allah Tomei, why does the Pasuk instead say Allah Tomei? Shmamina. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva says, "Ala tomei tahor, v'ala tahor tomei." It comes to teach us that if you sprinkle on a tomei person, he becomes tahor. But if you sprinkle on a tahor person, he becomes tomei. V'rabbanan, where's the rabbanan answer to that? They say no. Ha'ilad dvarim amakablan tumah hu da'asa. No, the word ala tomei comes to teach us what we just said. That if you sprinkle the water and it lands on something that's not makabel tumah, then it's not considered a valid sprinkling. And therefore, again, according to Rashi's Girsa, we would say that he intended to sprinkle on an animal. Then nothing happens. Nothing happened with that water because no malacha was done with it yet. Therefore, he can reuse the water that's left on the azev to sprinkle on a person. Whereas the other way, not because malacha was done. And according to Rabbi Hananel, the Girsa would be the other way around. But anyway, so the Chum say that's what the word ala tomei teaches us that. Aval hocha kavachoymu. But as far as this, that you, Rabbi Akiva, are saying that if a tohor person is sprinkled, it becomes tomei. No, you make a kavachoymu. Im ala tomei tohor, if the water makes a tomei person tohor, ala tohor like koshikin. How much more so? It should make a tohor, it should leave a tohor person tohor. Rabbi Akiva, so what does Rabbi Akiva answer to that? That is a perfectly good kavachoymu. So the answer is, Hainu to Ka'ama Shlomesh, Rabbi Akiva says, as a matter of fact, you're right. That is on the face of it a good Kavachomer, and yet the din is not like that because of the Xeris Akosiv from how he learns the word Alatome. And he says, Hainu to Ka'ama Shlomesh, Amarti Echkoma, Vihira Chokamimeni. Now we understand what Shlomesh meant when he says in Kehelas, I thought that I would be wise, but it's distant from me. We know everybody agrees that that means that Shlomesh didn't understand something about the Paradoma. So Rabbi Akiva is saying, what is that he didn't understand about the Paradoma? What's the logic that a tohor person who's sprinkled should become tamei when we have a perfectly good kavachomer that would tell us the other way around? Whereas the chachamim would say, no, the kavachomer is a good kavachomer. What Rabbi Akiva didn't understand is, that's what the Gemara says, v'rabbanan, hahu, that, what is it that Shlomo didn't understand, l'maza u'l'mazin olav tohor, the fact that if the person who's sprinkled with paradoma water remains tohor, the one who's sprinkled on becomes tohor, v'negeya behen tamei, but we know that if a person touches the paradoma water, not for the purpose of sprinkling, then he becomes tamei. So that the Chachamim said, that's what Shlomo couldn't understand why that is. Which, by the way, Tosfos points out that really, when you get down to it, I mean, the one who was sprinkled anyway needs tevila and head of shemesh, because after being sprinkled on the seventh day, the pasuk says he then needs tevila and head of shemesh. So really, then in that case, the one who touches the water is not for the purpose of sprinkling, is not any worse off. He also needs tevila and head of shemesh. But the difference is what caused him the tumah. What caused him the tumah? It's not he didn't become tamei from the sprinkling. He became tamei. The hazar itself makes him tahor. Now he just needs to complete his tara by going to the mikveh. Whereas the mechatas makes him tamei where he wasn't before. Also Tosfos says maybe mazin olav tahor means that if the water fell on him, rather than being sprinkled on him. Okay. Anyway, the point is that the Chachamim say there is definitely something in Parah Aduma, which is beyond any human understanding, which is why Shlomo says I couldn't understand it. But it's not that if a Torah person is sprinkled, it becomes Tomei, like you say, Rabbi Akiva, but rather that if a Torah person carries or touches, actually, we haven't gotten to carrying yet, if he touches the Parah Aduma water unnecessarily, then he becomes Tomei. So the Gemara asks, so Mazah Tahar? So you're telling me the one who sprinkles the Parah Aduma water remains Tahar? The Pasuk says the one who sprinkles the Parah Aduma water has to wash his clothes, which is the standard term in the Torah, for that he became an Avat Tuma, and his clothes became a Rishon Tuma, and therefore he has to dip himself and his clothes in the mikveh. So you see that the one who sprinkles does become Tamei. The answer is no. My Mazah Negea. No, the word Mazah in this Pasuk doesn't mean somebody who sprinkles. It means the one who touches it. Question is, what do you mean? Voksiv maza, voksiv negeya. What do you mean? The pasuk mentions them separately. It mentions in that pasuk, umaze me anidu yichabes brodov, vanegeya beme anidu yitmad orev. So it mentions them separately. Va'oid maza boy kibus brodim negeya lo boy kibus brodim. On the contrary, it seems the Torah is being more machmir on the one who's maza, because it says he has to dip his clothes in the mikveh as well, meaning that he becomes an avatoma and his clothes become a rishon l'toma. Whereas by the negeya, it just says yitmad orev, he is toma until the evening, implying that his clothes don't become toma. He's only a rishon l'toma. So you can't say the word maza means somebody who touches the water. Now, Ella, my maze noise. No, rather we have to say the word maze in the pasuk means somebody who carries the water, not somebody who touches the water, but somebody who carries it. So the question is v'nichtav rachmana noise. So why does the Torah phrase it in that way? Why does it phrase it using the word noise? Why does it phrase it using the word maze? It should say straight out noise. My time aksiv maze. Why instead does it say maze? So the answer is hokamash malon, because the Mishnah wants, I mean the pasuk wants you to know when is a person tomei for carrying parah aduma water debein and shir hazar, only if he carried an amount that's enough for hazar. So if he carries less than that, then not. So in other words, the same way, it's in a way, then, for example, it's similar to a nevela. If a person touches a nevela, he becomes tomei. If he carries a nevela, he also becomes tomei. But in both cases, you need a minimum shiur. And less than that, he doesn't become tomei. The same thing over here, for him to become tomei from touching or carrying the water, there needs to be a minimum shiur. Now, Tosfos asks the question, what on earth would make us say, okay, we can say that the Pasuk is teaching us a drosha, that it means you need a minimum shir azar, but after all, what on earth makes us say that the word maze mehanida should mean not the one who's sprinkling, but rather the one who's carrying it? So Tosfos says, because it says vihiza ha-tohar, it says the tohar should sprinkle, so that means, in other words, that he remains tohar after he sprinkles as well. Different other mafoshim bring up different possibilities where exactly we learn it from, or how exactly we see that the pasuk is in fact referring to somebody who carries the water, but that's how it is. There is a very common misconception that people have, in fact, that we always learn as kids that the parah aduma water is mataharis atmeim, or mataharis atmeim, or mataharis atahurim. So we grow up sometimes thinking that it means that the kohen who sprinkles the parah aduma water becomes tamei. He does not, as the Gemara is saying over here. The people who are involved in preparing the parah aduma, the ones who burn it, the ones who gather up the ashes, etc., they become tamei, but the one who sprinkles it does not. Okay. So the Gemara says, if you're telling me that you need a shir hazah, and that's what the pasuk means by saying umaze, that it means the one who carries an amount enough for hazah, hanichal amandar ama hazah tzricha shir, that works according to the opinion that there's a minimum amount of water that needs to land on the person or on the keli to make him tahor, which is a machloek that's in zvachim. El olamanda omar hazah ein tzricha shir, but according to the opinion that it does not require a shir, even if one molecule of it touches him, then that's good enough. My ikalamema, then what are you going to say? There's no minimum shir of hazah, therefore, why should there be a minimum shir? So therefore, how can the pasuk be implying that you need a minimum shir of him carrying it to become tamei? The answer is afilu lamanda omar hazah ein tzricha shir, even according to the opinion that hazard does not require a shear, hanimili agaba de gavra. That means once the water lands on the person, there doesn't have to be any minimum shear of it. Ava b'mona tzricha shear. But when it's in the keli, and the person is dipping in the ezov in order to sprinkle it, then there has to be a minimum amount of water in the keli for that to be valid. The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Pora, Kama Yehei Behen Behei Kedei Hazah. How much water does there have to be in the keli in order to have enough for Hazah? Kadesh Yitbo, Roshi give Olin enough to be able to dip in the tips of the twigs of the Ezo, the Yaza, and sprinkle. In other words, you have to have, you can't have so little water in there that he has to like use the Ezo to wipe up water from the sides or from the bottom of the keli in order to have enough water to sprinkle. Yeah, there has to be enough for him to actually dip into. So there does need to be a minimum shear of water in the keli to be able to do that. And therefore, that's the minimum shear that a person then would become tamei if he carried it, or if he touched it, or if he carried it. You also have another opinion that says that also when the water lands on the person, there has to be a minimum on the keli, there has to be a minimum amount of it that lands there in order to be metahil. But regardless, you need a minimum shear to begin with in the keli. That's the minimum shear that we're saying a person is tamei if he touches it or carries it. Okay. So with all of that then. So again, this was all to explain what Rav Chisda was saying, that he was saying our Mishnah cannot be like Rav Akiva, because again, according to Rav Akiva agrees that somebody who touches or carries the parah drum of water unnecessarily is becoming tamei. He also agrees, on the other hand, that the kohen who sprinkles it remains tahor. However, he holds that if a tamei person was sprinkled with it, then he becomes tamei. And vice versa, a tamei person becomes tahor, and he says that's what Shlomo HaMelech couldn't understand. So therefore, according to Rav Akiva, how would you be able to have that the Kohen Gadol is going to be sprinkled every day with the parah adrumah water, and then he's going to do the avodah that day? As soon as he's sprinkled with parah adrumah water, the pashtus, he was tahor, he wasn't tamei mes before that. If he was tamei mes, he's not in the azara in the first place. So we're only being maza on him for reasons that we discussed earlier in the Gemara, either because again we learned from the Miluim, and in the Miluim, Aaron and his sons were sprinkled every day. Or we do it as Maila Ba'alma, we do it as a special thing in order to demonstrate the high level of Kedusha that he's gonna be expected to keep to on Yom Kippur. But either way, according to Rabbi Akiva, it would make him tamei, and he can't do the avoda that day. So our Mishnah apparently is not according to Rabbi Akiva. On the other hand, Abaya Omar filo tamei Rabbi Akiva. No, Abaya says you could even say our Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Akiva, because you can do it like this: the Ovid avoda kula yoma. What you do is you have the Kohen Gadol do the avoda all day long, all of panya. Then in the evening, before the end of the day. After he's done the last avodah of the day, which is lighting the lamps of the menorah, then madu'ale, then they sprinkle him with parah adrumah water, with tovel, then he can tovel, v'ovid head of Hashemesh, and he has head of Shemesh, and the next day he's as good as new, and therefore, so we can still have that we sprinkle him every day, and even according to Rav Akiva, that doesn't interfere with him doing the avodah, because we do the sprinklings in the evening. Why didn't Rav Chisda like that explanation? What forced Rav Chisda to say not? So there's a couple of explanations that the Achronim give. One of them is that we assume the same way as we're saying that he does the avodah of the Korban Tamid, which is in the morning, and he prepares the lamps of the Menorah, which is the morning. But Pashtus, we would assume that the Hazar is also taking place in the morning. And again, according to Rav Akiva, that would make him Tamei for the rest of the day. But Rava says, not a Rava, Abaya says it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. The avodah could be during the day, and the Hazar is done in the evening. Okay. Next, we said in the Mishnah, Machtus Actotus or Metivus Aneris, we said that among the things the Kohen Gadol does during the 7 days before Yom Kippur every day is he offers the Ktotus and he prepares the lamps of the menorah. So now the question is going to be about the order of things. Alma Ktotus Pradesh of Ahadur Neiris. So you see from that first you bring the Ktotus, then you prepare the lamps. The problem with that is, Uraminu, I have a contradiction on that from a Mishnah in Tumid. So in Masechta Tumid, it describes, a bunch of Mishnayos actually. So you have the Mishnayos over there describe the order of how they did the things every day in the Mishmikdash and the various pyoses that they did to decide who gets what, which we're also going to talk about that a little bit in the second parak of our Masechta. So the Mishnah says, Misha Zocha B'dishin Mizbeach HaPnimi. First, the Mishnah mentions the one who was Zocha to clean off the Mizbeach HaPnimi, and it goes and describes what he did, how he removed the ashes. Then Umisha Zocha b'Menora. Then a later Mishnah says the one who was Zocha to clean out the Menorah, to do Atovas Aneiros, and then later on Umisha Zocha b'Ktoras. Only later on in a later Perek does it describe the one who had the Schus to do the Ktoras, who won in the girdle to do the Ktoras. Then he goes and does it. So you see, therefore, that that cleaning the menorah is that cleaning the menorah goes before the ketores. Which Tosfos mentioned, there was no particular reason to mention the dishun mizbeach apnimi. We're focusing over here on the menorah versus bringing the ketores. So Tosfos just says that the reason why we're mentioning dishun mizbeach apnimi is to stress that here we're talking about the menorah and the ketores in the morning. Because otherwise we wouldn't know. In the menorah, they do atovas aneiros of the menorah twice a day. They do, they according to most Rishonim, they prepare it in the morning and they light it in the evening. According to the Rambam, they light it twice a day. The ketores is also brought twice a day. So therefore, we need the dishun mizbeach apnimi to tell us that we're actually talking about over here in the morning, because the dishun mizbeach apnimi is only done once a day. Okay, so the point is that again, over there, you have the neiros and then the ketores, whereas in our Mishnah, we're mentioning first ketores and then neiros. So the answer is Amar Rav Huna, Man Tana Tomid Rav Shimon Isha Mitzbahu. The answer is, says Rav Huna, the Tana of Masechta Tomid is Rav Shimon Isha Mitzbah. Now, Rav Shimon Isha Mitzbah, we don't really have him in many other places, but we do find Brises where he addresses the Seder of the Avodah. So therefore, Rav Huna starts with the assumption that he's the one who taught Masechta Tomid. Now, the Gemara immediately is going to shoot that down and show, in other words, the idea would be that our Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah according to all the Tanoim, whereas the one in Tamid would be specifically according to Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah. So the Gemara is going to point out in a second that we see Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah actually argues with something we say in Masech the Tamid, and we're going to change that. But the point is, we're still going to stick with the idea that Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah is the Tana who taught certain Mishnayos in this context. What we have to realize is like this. Dodo Sura Shoinim has an explanation as follows. Most of the Mishnayos, even though, I mean, we always say that Rebbe, we know that Rebbe arranged the Mishnayos as we have them, but many of the Mishnayos existed long before Rebbe. Some of them go back hundreds of years before Rebbe even. Some of them may even go back as far as the Anshei Knesset HaGdola. But what it is now you have that most of the Mishnayos deal with halachas that are applicable at all times, and therefore we need to know the details of them. Therefore the Chachamim, so they didn't write them down yet because it was Torah Shabbat Peh, but they had to arrange it in a way that everybody could learn and everybody could remember it. But they didn't need, while the Beis Mikdash was standing, for example, they didn't need a Masechta Tomid to describe the order of the Avodas every day in the Beis Mikdash. They didn't need most of Masechta Yuma, or at least substantial parts of it, which describe the Avodah of Yom Kippur, because you don't need to learn that by heart. You go to the older Kohenim and ask them, practically speaking, what's done every day, what's done every Yom Kippur. Only after the Churban did they have a need to write these Mishnayos, Tomid, also Midos, which describes the blueprint of the Beis Mikdash and most of our Masechta and so forth. So those were first composed after the Churban Bais Sheni. Therefore, Rashi mentions later on in the sugya on Tesvav Amud Beis that the structure of our sugya is a little bit unusual. That we're going to try to say that the Tana in one Masechta is that one Masechta was taught by a certain Tana and another Masechta was taught by a different Tana. We don't usually do that. And later on, the Gemara is going to bring another similar sugya pointing out a contradiction between Tumid and Midos. So now, so Rashi just mentioned that it's an unusual structure for a sugya, but based on this, the answer is because all these things, Tomid and Midos and most of Yuma, were composed first after the Churban, as opposed to, and therefore you could attribute them to a particular known Tana, as opposed to most of the other Masechtas and Mishnayos, which existed in some form long before the Churban, and therefore you don't attribute them to any specific Tana, because they all go back to a basic form of the Mishnah that went back deep into the time of the Bais Sheni, maybe even to the Anshei Knesset HaGdola. Okay, so Rav Huna is saying again that given that we know that Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah addresses issues with the Tamid, then we're going to start with the assumption that he's the author of Masechta Tamid, and therefore, so he holds one way, and the Tana of our Mishnah holds the other way. The problem with that is, we find that Rav Shimon Isha Mitzvah says exactly the other way around. The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah, Bola the Kain Mizra. Now you have like this, when it comes to sprinkling the blood of the Korban Tamid, so we know the Korban Tamid being an Ola, it had any oila has shtei matonas shein arba, like we say in Ezer Makayman. So you go to one corner of the mizbeach and dash the blood against the corner, so it goes on two sides, and then you go to the opposite corner, caddy corner of that, and do the same thing. So you have two matonas, which winds up as four. And we're going to discuss later on in the sugya which two corners do we do. Well, we're going to say now which two corners we do. We're going to explain later on in the sugya why dafka those two corners. But the Mishnah says, "Bala the Ken Mizrachis Tzvonis." He first comes to the northeastern corner, Nosin Mizrach Tzvona, and he applies the blood onto the mizbeach in such a way to the northeastern corner, so that some of the blood goes towards the east and some of it towards the north. Then Marovis Dremis. Then he goes caddy corner to there, to the southeast corner, to the southwest corner rather of the mizbeach. Nosin Marova Drema, and again he does an application of blood, which goes, some of it goes to the west and some of it to the south. So that way, all four sides of the mizbeach have blood on them, but there were only two matonis. Later on, again, the Gemara is going to explain why dafka those two corners. Why couldn't it be, for example, why couldn't it be the other way around? Why couldn't it be the southeast and the why couldn't it be the southeast and the northwest corners? Anyway, Vitoni Allah. Now we learn in a Bryce. Now that's the Stam Mishnah there in Tomid, but Vitoni Allah. Then we learn in a Bryce on that. Rav Shimon Eshamitzvah Mashana Vitomid. Rav Shimon Eshamitzvah says, I agree that that's true of most Korbanos Oila, that you do like that, but with the Korban Tomid, you do differently. With the Korban Tomid, you do differently. First, he goes to the northeast corner and he does one application, one splash of blood that goes to the north and to the east. Fine, so far that's the same as the Tanakhama said. But then Ma'arovis Dremis, then he goes to the southwest corner and he does two applications over there. Noisin Ma'arova v'achakach noisin Dremis. First, he splashes it on the west wall of the Mizbeach and then on the south wall. So according to him, with the Tumid, you have three applications of blood, unlike with most Korbanos Oila, where you have only two. Later on, on Tesvav Amad Aleph, the Gemara is going to explain why Rav Shimon Eshamitzvah holds that way. The point is that we see that just the opposite of what Rav Huna is saying. He's saying that Rav Shimon Eshamitzvah is the Tana of Masech the Tumid, but here we see exactly the opposite. The Mishnah in Masech the Tumid says one thing, and Rav Shimon Eshamitzvah says exactly the opposite. Ela Amar Rabbi Yechanan Mantana Seido Yuma Rabbi Shimon Eshamitzvah. So Rabbi Yechanan says, fine, you can answer that Seido Yuma or Mishnah and the Mishnayis in Or Masechta that are dealing with the Seder of the Talmud is according to Rabbi Shimon Eshamitzvah. So fine, so you have the Stam Mishnah and Talmud as according to a different Tana, and Or Masechta, the seven parak of Or Masechta that describes the Avodah of Yom Kippur were arranged by Rabbi Shimon Eshamitzvah. Again, the idea would be the same as before. These are masechtas that were first arranged and first put into words after the Churban, because they needed to remember how things were. So before we thought that Rav Shimon Eshamitzvah was the one who arranged Tamid. Now we're saying that no, he's the one who arranged Yuma. But the Gemara says still that still doesn't help us. But Rami Seidu Yuma, Seidu Yuma. We have a contradiction between two Mishnayos in Yuma itself. Because here we're saying in our Mishnah, again, we mentioned that the Kohen Gadol brings the Ketores and prepares the lamps of the menorah, implying that Ketores comes first. But the Tanan, in the next Perek, we learn, Pais HaSheni, they would do the second Pais to pick the Kohenim who are going to do the Avodas, and that includes Mishoichet. They start by picking which Kohen is going to shech the Korban Tamid, which, by the way, I mean, the Shechita could be done by a Zohar, but practically speaking, they would like to have Kohenim do it if possible. So who would shech it? Mi Zorek, who's going to be sprinkling the blood of the Korban? Mi Medashin Mizbech HaPnimi, who's going to be cleaning off the Mizbech HaPnimi, the Mizbech HaZav? Or Mi Medashin Es HaMenorah, who's going to be cleaning out the menorah? Or Mi Mala Evarim LaKevesh, and who's going to be bringing up the limbs of the animal of the Korban Tamid onto the ramp of the Mizbeach, which later on they would have a fourth pious to determine who brings them from the ramp and throws them into the fire. And then the Mishnah continues, Pious HaShlishi Chadoshim L'Ketores Baruv HaFisu, that the third pious is they announce anybody who's new to the Ketores, anybody who's never brought Ketores before, come and join a pious to see who gets to do the Ketores. The reason why they would do Dafka, the new Kohen, and we're going to learn in the next parak, because bringing the Ketores was a segula for a person becoming rich. So therefore, they wanted to have as many Kohanim as possible, enjoy that bracha, and therefore they would have that only the ones who had never done it before would be eligible for that pious. If everybody had done it before, then they wouldn't have it. Then everybody is equally eligible for the pious, but otherwise they would give first, preference to people who never did it before. Anyway, the point is that there we see that the second pious determines who cleans out the menorah, and the third pious determines who brings the ketores. So you see that menorah comes before ketores, exactly the opposite of the order in our Mishnah, where it says that the Kohen Gadol brings the ketores and prepares the menorah. So the answer is, Amar Abaya, like Kasha, Kanba Tovas Shtei Neres, Kanba Tovas Chomesh Neres. There's a difference between the cleaning out, pairing of the five lamps of the menorah. You do five of them, then you do some other avodah, and then you do the other two. For reasons that we're going to discuss later on, and we're going to discuss in the third perek, why that would be, why we break them up like that. But in any case, we do break them up like that. So what it is, the ketores is brought between those two. He does the hatova of the five lamps, then the ketores, then the hatova of the two lamps. So fine, our Mishnah mentions ketores before the neiros, meaning the last two. And later on, when it describes the piosis, so it says that they make the pious of who's going to clean the menorah and who's going to bring the, and then the next pious who's going to bring the ketores, and the one who won in the pious of cleaning the menorah is going to clean the five, and then there's going to be some other avoda done, and then there's going to be another two done. So now, then the question would be, in that case, Tosfos says, in that case, then still, why would our Mishnah be focusing on only the two? On the face of it, the Kohen Gadol does all seven of them. So Tosfos says, fine, okay, the last two is the finishing of the Avoda. Maybe even, in fact, the five the Kohen Gadol didn't need to do. Again, the whole purpose of the Kohen Gadol doing this Avoda, doing the 7 days, is to familiarize him with what he needs to do. So therefore, that he doesn't need to clean out all seven lamps in order to be and prepare them in order to be familiar. With what to do. It's good enough if he does two of them. So our Mishnah could be implying, in other words, that you have during those 7 days, somebody else, whoever won the pious each day, does that tova of the five lamps. Then the ketores is brought. Then the ketores is brought, and we're saying the Kohen Gadol brings that. And then the Kohen Gadol then goes and does the other two lamps of the menorah, and that's enough to familiarize him with what he needs to do. The problem with that is lememra deketores mafsik lahu. So are you telling me then that we break up the five and the two with ketores, that the order is five candles, five lamps, then the ketores, then the two lamps? We find later on Daf Lamed Gimel that Abaya gave us the order of the Ma'aracha, the order of the Avodas during the daytime, Mishmei de Gemara, in the name of how the Chachamim, the way the Bnei HaYeshiva learned from their Rebbeim. We say it every morning in davening, and over Dama Tomid Mafsik Lahu, and we break them up with the Dama Tomid, rather. We say, Atovas Chomash Neres, Atovas Chomash Neres, Kodemus the Dama Tomid, that the Dama Tomid, Kodem Atovas Shtei Neres. So according to Abaya himself, according to Abaya himself, then, according to Mishmei de Gemara, the way the Chachamim, all in the Yeshiva, all learned from their Rebbeim, the order is that the sprinkling of the blood of the Korban Tamid comes between the five and the two, not the offering of the Ketores. The offering of the Ketores is only later, about Travis Chamash Neres Kedemus the Ketores. Amri said, answered, like Kasha, Hahila, Abba Shol, Holler Abbanon. That's not a problem. That description on Daf Lamed Gimel and what we say every day in davening is according to Abba Shol. Here we're talking according to the Rabbanon. The Tanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa, that there's machlokas on that. Lo yetiv is aneres v'achakach yakdir. You don't first clean out and pair the lamps of the menorah and then bring the ketores. Ela yakdir v'achakach yetiv. First you bring the ketores, later on you do the atovas aneres. So Abba Shol, I'm a meitiv v'achakach machdir. Whereas Abba Shol says first you do the atova and later on you do all of them. So according to the Tanna Kamma, you don't do all of them. You do the ketores in the middle, like our Mishnah is implying, and then you finish off with the other two. It doesn't mean that according to the Chachamim, you do the Ketores before you do any of the lamps of the menorah. The Chachamim agree that you need something in between. You can't bring the Ketores until the blood of the Korban Tamid is sprinkled. So then you need something to break them up with, and that has to be. So therefore, according to the Chachamim, when we say lo yetiv achakach yakter, means you don't do all of them and then the Ketores, but rather you do the Ketores in between. Abba Sholem and meitiv achakach machter, whereas Abba Shol says that you first do the Hatova, you first do the Hatova of all the Neiros, and then you bring the Ketores, which is how we say it in morning davening. So we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with explaining Abba Shoal's reasoning and the Chachamim's reasoning. But there's an interesting point that Rebbe made in one of the last sichas that the Rebbe spoke on Adar Aleph, Tavshin Nun Aleph, Tavshin Nun Beis, rather. So a couple of weeks before Chav Zayin, it was like a week or two before Chav Zayin Adar, the Rebbe talked about that every day in davening, we say the order the way Abaye says it. And the Beis Yosef says that, why is that? Even the halacha is not necessarily like Abba Shoal, but he says that the Olam found that there you have a clear description of each of the avodas, and therefore they decided it's a good idea to say it. But in fact, in the avodah, so the Rebbe points out, in the avodah of Yom Kippur, when we say the Seder Havodah on Yom Kippur in Musaf, we say it the other way around. There we say like the Chachamim, that you have the Hatova and that you have the Ketores between the Hatova Saneris. So the Rebbe explained over there that we have this two different things. He says like this: the Olam found, Olam Meloshen Helam, when we live nowadays in a time of Helam the Hester, so the Olam finds that Abaya, where Abaya we know is Asher B'chol Yerucham Yosim, when we're in a state of being Yosimim, and it's a state of Abba Shoal, when Shoal means borrowed. So to speak, we have to borrow Abba, we have to borrow the Eibishter and bring him into the world, because otherwise the world is concealing all the course. Then in that case, we have to break it up with Dama Tomid. We're not on the level to be able to say that Keturis comes in between. Ketores has to only come after we finish with the Neiris. But on Yom Kippur, we're already on a higher level anyway than we are the rest of the year. Then we can say the true way of things, which is the way the Chachamim say it. Then we don't need Abba Shoal. Then we're not, so to speak, borrowing the Eibishter into the world. Then we're able to do things in the proper order according to the Chachamim, which is the halacha that we do the Dama, that we do the Ketores in between. We're able to do the Ketores before we've even finished cleaning out and preparing the lamp, all the lamps of the menorah. Okay, so again, so we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, dealing with this issue of Abba Shoal versus the Chachamim, and then dealing with who's the author of our Mishnayos over here versus the Mishnayos in Talmud, and so forth.